Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to today's webinar. We are about to get started now that everybody can hear us. So my name is Michelle Belorchi, and I'm an outreach and recruitment officer here at the Institute of International Education based in Washington, D.C. And today's webinar focuses on opportunities in business, economics, and entrepreneurship for U.S. scholars, so academics, professionals, independent researchers who are interested in the global opportunities we have in these fields. Just before we begin, I'd like to point out if you are a student or have recently graduated and are interested in pursuing opportunities as a graduate student or for your doctoral research, I would encourage you to visit the Fulbright Student Program website, and you can get more information there. Today's opportunities are focused for the PhD and above or terminal degree holders and professionals, so non-students, so to speak. All right, so let's dive right in. A little background about the Fulbright program. It's been around for over 70 years. It was established in 1946 by Senator Fulbright of Arkansas, and it was his vision to expand and strengthen relationships between people of the United States and the rest of the world, and to do this through education and cultural exchange. And this became the Fulbright program. This is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, specifically the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs, and it is administered by IIE, and it's been administered by IIE since the inception. So we're proud to be working with the State Department and ECA in promoting this program and recruiting talented and experienced scholars to interact with our counterparts all around the world. And the program has really evolved in the last seven decades to accommodate kind of the changing landscape of American academia and just really kind of keep up with the themes and innovative kind of topics and ways scholars and researchers are coming together for collaborative research. You can see on the left-hand side we have a picture of one of our first grantees to Burma in 1960. And then looking to the picture on the right, one of our grantees on the Arctic Scholar Initiative, which is something that is relatively new to the Fulbright program. It really speaks to the program addressing relevant themes and topics around the world. So that's a little background about the Fulbright program. And in terms of the eligibility, just to start out, the baseline eligibility in terms of who can think about applying, it is for U.S. citizens. This is the U.S. side of the program. We also have the foreign side of the program, the visiting scholar side. So this is specifically for U.S.-based academics and professionals who hold U.S. citizenship. And then, of course, depending on the award requirements, you may or may not be required to have a PhD for the award or a terminal degree. Many awards are open to candidates with master's degrees, with several years of experience. So we do welcome experts and professionals to apply to the program as well. For awards that have a teaching component, it's important to have a look at the specific requirements in terms of how many years of teaching is required. And in terms of those of you who have held a Fulbright in the past and are interested in reapplying to the program, we do welcome your application. We do have a policy, however, that there must be a two-year gap from the time you complete your award to the time you apply for another grant. So that may actually be a three-year total gap if you've completed it before, after August 1st. Our deadline is August 1st, and so there does need to be a 24-month gap in between. We also have removed the lifetime cap, the limits on the lifetime number of awards you can have throughout your lifetime. So we do welcome grantees to continue to explore other ways to engage with Fulbright. And also, if you are on the roster for the Fulbright Specialist Program, you are also welcome to apply to the Fulbright Scholar Program. The roster holds your name for 3 years, but you're still welcome to apply to the Scholar Program as long as the grant dates are different. Okay, so in terms of the application, nothing too unpredictable. The online application form that you'll start, And then, of course, at the heart of it, the project statement, where you outline your proposal within 5 pages, and the CV and letters of reference. And then, of course, depending on the award, different documents will be required. If there's a teaching component, we ask you to submit 2 to 3 syllabi. If there's a research component to your project, then a 3-page bibliography. And then also, depending on the requirements of the award, if there's a language proficiency report required from an external evaluator, the letter of invitation from the potential host, and then for applicants in the arts, architecture, writing, and journalism fields, to submit supplemental materials, kind of like a mini portfolio. So all of that is outlined in each of the award descriptions. And the important thing to keep in mind is that the application does have page limits, you know, in terms of all of the documents we require, so that they're consistent among all applicants. So you really need to focus on targeting and tailoring your CV to just what you're proposing in the award, and get it to the appropriate page limit. Now, speaking of hosts and potential hosts, identifying hosts for the letter of invitation, about half of the awards in the catalog have a letter of invitation requirement, while the other half, either it's optional or strongly preferred, or in some cases, in a very few cases, that you should not seek it out. So pay attention to, you know, if the award you're interested in has a requirement that's important, and we can help you find it out. If they ask you not to seek out a letter of invitation, then you don't have to worry about that. But if a host institution is identified, and you'll often see that in the location section, then you can contact the host directly. We usually provide the contact email and the person's name either at the host or at the commission, who can help you with procuring that letter of invitation. However, oftentimes awards do not list hosts. They tell us that you can affiliate with any appropriate institution. So what does that mean? That means that it's really up to you to kind of, you know, gauge interest at hosts that you've identified as being relevant to your project. You might start with the international office on your campus and seeing if they've had any, if the campus has hosted any scholars from that country or from that particular institution. You could also use our Fulbright Scholar Directory, which is a wonderful tool. You can search according to the country, according to the discipline, and more importantly, according to the host institution, and see where our scholars, you know, where they've gone and you know, where they're affiliated currently, so you can reach out and ask them to kind of maybe help you and assist you in identifying who to reach out to. Now, in terms of the letter of invitation, keep in mind that it's an expression of interest, so it's not binding. In particular, for the awards that have a host institution identified, the partner awards, let's say, if it's the UK, let's say Fulbright University of Manchester or University of Leeds, for example, They would be providing letters of invitation to all applicants who expressed interest in the award. And so keep in mind, they might write several of these. It's non-binding, but it does help the application and the committee in terms of showing that you do have this interest from the host and that they are ready to collaborate with you. Now, in terms of who should the letter come from, it should come from your collaborator, the person that you would be working closely with on the grant. It doesn't have to be from the dean or the president or the rector or the provost, really just the person who you'll be collaborating with, so they can really provide some detail, give us an idea about what the project that you'll be working on and why it's relevant that you come, you know, you with your background, et cetera, come to the institution. And it should be on the host's letterhead. Now, they can send this letter to you in an email, scanned, or you know, hard copy, and then you would scan that and upload it directly to the application. So it can be addressed to you, and that's fine. You can see it, and if you feel that perhaps it's lacking in detail, and if you have a strong enough connection with them or a good understanding, you can even ask them, oh, could you also include this, and kind of have it a little more robust, because that'll always help. Okay, and this is our catalog of awards. You're probably familiar with it right now if you've done a little searching and we've been in contact through email, but I do want to point out that this is a wonderful way to start your search because it's a great way to filter things and to kind of find awards that suit your profile or the grant, the length of the grant that you're allowed to, you know, go on in the sense of if you have some time constraints. The category, if you're a more senior scholar, you would like to see what the Distinguished Chair Awards are. If you're more of an early career academic, see what awards are open to early career academics. So there's lots of ways to go through this, and it's a great time to start now. There's a little under 2 months left before the deadline, so you still have plenty of time to search and finalize which award you're going to be applying to. And at the end of this, I'll be going through the catalog and sharing a little bit of how you can do these searches. We have, in terms of the Business, Economics, and Entrepreneurship Awards, we have over 140 awards out of the 473. So there's a lot to go through, and we're going to be kind of going in region by region now and highlighting some of the offerings that we have here. So to start out, in Sub-Saharan Africa, we have the award to Burkina Faso, and it's open to not only business administration but law or medical sciences. So depending on you know, who's applying to what, so if you're from business admin, you would be either placed at the University of St. Thomas or the Institut Supérieur Privé Polytechnique. So there are two locations identified for that award. And a great thing about this award is that the housing is provided by the host. So that's one less thing for scholars to have to worry about when they get there. So it's a wonderful opportunity. This is a long-term opportunity. I believe it's 9 months in Burkina Faso. And Sierra Leone has the All Disciplines Award, and Business and Administration and Economics are preferred. This is a 6 to 10 month grant. That means you can opt for 6 to 10 months, and it's teaching, research, or a combination of both. So those are some of the highlighted opportunities in Sub-Saharan Africa. You can get a complete listing by going on to the Sub-Saharan Africa regional page and finding out some more opportunities there. The All Disciplines Awards are always a great bet if they haven't clearly outlined business administration or economics, because usually those two disciplines are featured in the All Disciplines list. And then going on to the Middle East and Northern Africa, we have two specific awards that I'd like to highlight. The first one is Egypt, and this is a wonderful opportunity to be at Cairo University. So to be in the capital and to teach business admin courses and collaborate on a research project, they stipulate that the teaching would be about 12 hours a week, or 6 hours a week, sorry, and you would also consult on curriculum and collaborate with faculty and conduct seminars and workshops. So great opportunity in Cairo. And then in Bahrain, there's four potential host institutions for business and economics, so they're specifically looking for those two fields. And the University of Bahrain is very interested in public-private partnerships and looking at sustainable relationships between the government agencies and private industry, so that's one particular specialization. Another institute is the Bahrain Institute of Banking and Finance, and they seek applicants applications related to trade liberalization, free trade and bilateral and regional trade relationships, as well as economics. So lots of things to check out there. And then we have a few All Disciplines Awards that I wanted to highlight that also are open to business and economics disciplines. The award to Jordan, the award to Kuwait, and then Qatar. So lots of great opportunities to explore in a region that is very eager to have American scholars come and, you know, build capacity, you know, collaborate with researchers there, start new initiatives, innovate in the classroom, and also really have an impact with the students. So some exciting opportunities in the MENA region. And if you're interested in any of these awards, or if there's a country that you don't see that's highlighted here, please do reach out. All of our regional slides here have the contact email, so MiddleEastNorthAfrica@IIE.org, and we would be happy to help you. Each program, each region has a program staff to assist. Okay, so moving on to the Western Hemisphere, which covers a large territory. So starting out with the All Disciplines Award to Barbados and Eastern Caribbean. So this is an exciting opportunity to be in that area. They do offer the flex option, and this is a 4 to 9 month grant that offers teaching and or research. And there's you know, you have the opportunity in one of the seven Eastern Caribbean islands. And when I mentioned the flex option, that means that you can break up your visit, your research visit, into two segments, two or three segments over two academic years. So we'll be discussing a flex in a little detail, a little more detail further on. But the flex option, if you see that, is something to note. And then the award to Chile is 3 to 4 months, and they do have a preference if you have some working Spanish that will help, but it's not required. And so business and economics are listed as the preferred disciplines there. And also the award to Suriname. So oftentimes I think we forget about these small countries in the Western Hemisphere. Suriname on the northern, northeastern coast right above Brazil, they have you know, a preference. If you do have some Dutch experience, that might be good, but it's not required. And that would be a great chance to explore a country that really hasn't had many Fulbright scholars, and you could really make an impact there. And then Canada, our neighbor to the north, has research chairs in business and economics. So this is a wonderful opportunity for more senior academics, senior faculty, to affiliate with one of the four Canadian universities listed there. A letter of invitation is not required, so this is great. You don't have to worry about that. It's a four-month affiliation, so check out the opportunities. We have several opportunities in Canada. Okay, and then moving on to South and Central Asia, we have the award to India, so the Fulbright-Nehru Academic and Professional Excellence Award. There are actually 45 grants to this award, so it's the largest award in the catalog in terms of number of grants available. For this, there's no requirement of a letter of invitation, but it would help if you identify a host and mention that in your project statement. The commission then gets an idea of where you're hoping to be placed, and they will help you with the placement should you be selected. And of course, with India, what's great about being a Fulbright scholar there is that English is used very extensively, not just in academia, but in the media, et cetera, and so it's very easy to navigate and to get around and to collaborate with researchers there and teach classes. The award to Kazakhstan is in all disciplines as well, preference for business administration and economics. Again, letter of invitation is optional. And another great thing, you know, about this area, Kazakhstan is one of is now set to make English the third national language after Kazakh and Russian. So again, very eager to host American Fulbrighters and build capacity and really have more English in the classroom and in research. So Kazakhstan is a great great destination if you haven't thought about it before. And then we have the award to the Maldives. And the Maldives, if you're not familiar, is located right off the southern tip of India. And it's a relatively new democracy, 2008, about 10 years back, they formed a new government, and so there's the affiliation you can have with the Maldivian National University, which was formally established in 2011, or you can affiliate with government entities or government-related entities, and economics is one of the preferred preferred disciplines, and specifically looking at macroeconomics and tourism, those kind of things. And to point out that all of the awards to South and Central Asia do have the regional travel grant available. So while you're in country as a Fulbright scholar, you're able to apply for this travel grant that would allow you to go to another country within the region and hold a workshop, go to seminars, and you know, have some great interactions and collaborations throughout the region. Okay, so we've got the award to Australia. Now moving on to the East Asia and Pacific region. So the award to Australia is the Fulbright Scholar University of Technology Sydney. So the University of Technology Sydney is the partner in this award, and they are specifically interested in scholars who specialize in sustainability, data science, and health economics. So you can find the contacts and get some more information about UTS on the award description, and it's a 3 to 4 month award. Then we also have China, which has the distinguished chair. Again, so a distinguished chair for more of the senior scholars who have vast experience in teaching and a very strong publication record. They're looking for some scholar to come for 10 months, and this is a teaching and research award. So all the teaching will be in English, but if your research project requires Mandarin, you do need to provide evidence of that language ability through the language proficiency report. And then lastly in this region, the one that I would like to highlight, and it's by no means the last award available in the region, but the Philippines All Disciplines Award is also open to business admin and economics, and it's a wonderful opportunity. You can get more information on the website on the award description there. But again, these are just kind of a smattering of what's available in East Asia Pacific, another very big region with several awards available. Okay, and then lastly, the Europe and Eurasia region, another vast region with more than half of the awards are located in Europe in terms of overall in the catalog, so lots to parse through. Starting out, we have the Finland Award. It's the Fulbright-Hankin Distinguished Chair in Business and Economics. So again, for the senior scholars. This has the Flex grant available, which is rather rare for Distinguished Chair Awards. So this allows you to break up your research into two different segments. It's a 2 to 12 month grant, so lots of flexibility in there. So that's Fulbright-Hankin. And then moving on to Italy, the Fulbright Lectureship in Law and Economics at Bologna. So one of the oldest universities, a phenomenal city to be placed in. This is a teaching and research award for 3 to 6 months. So great opportunity in Italy. Not the only one in Italy, but this is the one that I wanted to highlight. And then in Slovak Republic, we have an award specifically geared towards the economics discipline, and there are some hosts that you can see that are identified in the letter in the award description. To assist you, and again, you can reach out to us for more information on how to approach a university and ask for a letter of invitation. And that is a 3 to 5 month teaching and research opportunity. In Croatia, we have the Business Administration and Economics Award. It is a teaching or teaching and research. So again, they aren't really interested in having that classroom collaborative kind of approach and interaction with students as well as faculty. So that's in Croatia, another wonderful destination to be a Fulbright scholar. And then France, we have the Postdoc Award in Social Sciences. So this is great for those of you that are early in your career. They do prefer 12 months, but 9 months is also available. So this would be really something for you to do for an academic year. And we do ask that your PhD be that you'd have it in hand by June of next year. So again, this is a great opportunity in France for postdoc applicants. And then in Austria, we have the Fulbright Catherine and Craig Hall Distinguished Chair for Entrepreneurship in Central Europe at the Vienna University of Economics and Business. And this is a great award opportunity because not only will you be placed at Vienna University, but you'll also have a chance to interact and give some lectures and workshops at another university in Central Europe that's affiliated with Vienna University. So this is a great opportunity for senior scholars who are experts in entrepreneurship and really to have some exposure for 4 months in teaching and research at not only Vienna University, but also at another affiliated host institution in the region. Okay, so that was a quick kind of overview of the highlights that we have in terms of the opportunities regionally. Now I'd like to go in and discuss how you can submit a competitive application, because really no matter what you're looking at in terms of whether the award has 10 grants or 1 grant, or in other cases, 45 grants like with India, the idea is that A competitive application will be strong regardless of the number of, you know, grants. You'll have a good chance. So I wouldn't necessarily be discouraged if there were only one or two opportunities. If your profile matches the award requirements and your expertise, everything speaks to the award description, that means you will be a great fit and submit a competitive application. So the first thing we would say when you're starting out is to be sure to include why Fulbright. Why are you applying to this program? How will this program help you in your overall professional development goals, in your goal of being a cultural ambassador? You know, there are several grant agencies that we realize that you can apply to. This one has the cultural ambassador, kind of cultural diplomacy element to it. So what drew you to the program? And then why that particular country? Why do you need to go to Brazil, for example, or to go to Germany? You know, we'd like to see the need for being in country. If you're going to just be dealing with data sets, the review committee would question, well, why does this person need to go to Germany for that? So that's really important to consider, that you express that and justify the need to be in country. And then looking at your professional experience, your profile, as I mentioned, and really communicating that and in the project statement, as well as, you know, in your selection of the award. So when you go through the catalog, and I'll be going through that towards the end, you'll see that we do have over 140 awards worldwide. And so really narrowing it down to what fits you, because you can only apply for one award per competition. So that really, you know, selecting the award is really half the battle. And of course, speaking to your adaptability in, you know, and cultural diplomacy, things like that. And then last but not least, the outcomes. So of course, we'd like to see not only the projected outcomes at the host institution when you go abroad, but also when you come back. You know, what happens? We hope to see that, it, you know, the Fulbright doesn't end when you get back on the airplane. You know, so to see that kind of multiplier effect, the continued collaboration, perhaps, you know, assisting in internationalizing your campus, or perhaps you had a great colleague that you were working with abroad and now you'd like that person to come and be a Fulbrighter at your institution. So we really want to kind of speak to the wider impact. So that would be something that should definitely be a part of your application. In terms of the review process and timeline, we've got it outlined here, and you can see it does take several months for all of this to happen. So keep in mind the August 1st deadline is for opportunities in the fall of 2019 and the spring of 2020. So there is a process. So right after August 1st, we get all of the applications together and we conduct our technical review and look for completeness. And then in September, we have the discipline review committees check for the merit and the academic you know, credentials and all of that, the feasibility and the academic merit of the project. And then from September to early November, we convene the peer regional review committees in Washington, D.C. And these are committees made up of former Fulbrighters who have been to that country or been to that particular region, and they are from, you know, all disciplines. They're from a range of disciplines. And so it really is important to have you know, that your project statement accessible to them as well. They'll be reviewing that. At the end of the peer review committees, applicants are either recommended or not recommended for the final review, which takes place in country. So that takes place from November to January, along with the selected grantees being reviewed by the Fulbright Foreign Scholarship Board. Okay, and then from starting in February up until May, all grantees are notified if they have been selected or not, and then grantee packets get sent out about this time of year for you know, pre-departure orientation information and all of that. Now, we have a plethora of information on our website, and sometimes it's kind of hard to navigate if you don't know exactly what you're looking for. That's why I've hyperlinked a lot of these. So what we'll do is we will archive this webinar within 5 business days, and you'll be able to access this, and everything that you see has been hyperlinked, so you can just go right straight to it. So, of course, in addition to the website and the catalog of awards, we have the application instructions as a PDF, the guidelines and some sample project statements, some guidance on that, And, of course, all of the webinars throughout the competition are archived. You can tune into that if you're interested in a specific region or the application walkthrough. And I also encourage you to check out our blog for posts about scholars, you know, as they're experiencing their grantee, their grant at the moment. You can really kind of see, you know, the whole Fulbright experience there. And then to connect with us on My Fulbright, if you haven't done so already, and this is where you would get our newsletters and updates and messages about the program. So here are some quick FAQs that I've put up. You'll notice that all of the slides that I showed for each region had a regional contact. So you'll also find the same contact in each of the award descriptions. And again, to emphasize, the deadline is this August, August 1st. And the application that we're speaking of is for the 2019-2020 academic year. And then another question that comes up often is, how many applications do we get, or, you know, what are my chances, what is the success rate? And we actually don't share that information per the FSSB policy. And once again, can you apply to two or more awards in the same competition? No, you only can apply to one award. However, if you're interested in multi-country grants, we do have some of those. Those tend to be strictly research grants, but you can take a look on the catalog for multi-country. And, for example, if you need to go to India and Nepal for your research, or you need to go to Botswana and South Africa, you could do a regional research grant. So with that, I think we've got plenty of time to take questions and also go through the catalog. So what I'll do now, again, this is our general contact address. And, of course, all of our social media that I encourage you to check out. And in the meantime, while we're pulling up the questions, I'm going to go straight to the site. And you can see this is our main the landing page. And when you come here, you'll see the catalog right there. And I'm going to go over here. And when you get to the catalog, I'm just going to click Search All Awards, and you'll see all 473 are there. So, of course, it's daunting to go through all of those. But what I'm going to do here is I'm going to search by discipline. So I've clicked Business Administration and Economics. And so what that does, I'm going to click Search All Awards. And now we've got it narrowed down to 148 awards that either have business, economics, or business or economics in the title, or it's listed as a preferred discipline. And then we also have an additional 193 awards that are all disciplines. So what you can do, for example, is if we've got this award to Australia, the Distinguished Chair in Entrepreneurship and Innovation, this is at the RMIT University, we can see here different tabs that will tell us kind of different information. So right off, we can see the grant activity is to undertake collaborative research related to entrepreneurship and innovation. Okay, there's one grant available. This is a research grant, and it's a distinguished chair. It's a PhD requirement. And we can also see the grant length, and if there's any specific dates that the grant should start. And here it's mentioned January or February in 2020, in line with the Australian academic year and the orientation and the gala. So that's nice to see that there's lots of different perks with this award as well. The location is in Melbourne at the RMIT University. And you can see different specializations. They're looking specifically for entrepreneurship. And then another feature of the award right here. If we scroll back up, we can click on requirements. We see that a letter of invitation is required, and for that they do provide the email contact and the phone number of the person you would need to contact for that, and they give you a little bit of information about the university. So there's lots of information on the award description. Here you can see the stipend and any kind of travel or relocation allowance if they allow dependents. So Fulbright families are certainly welcome. It's very, very common for Fulbrighters to bring their family with them. So tuition fees are waived for students in K through 12. And then any other benefits here. So this is just chock full of information. You can also get an overview of the award, of the country, and any contact there. They've got the Fulbright Commission in Australia contact there. So this is one way of looking and if this would be the right fit for you. You can also click here to get more information. I'd like to highlight kind of the checklists that we've developed. I'll click on teaching and research because it really encompasses everything. And you can go through and get the online application, the instructions, and then, of course, you'll see the really important pieces, the project statement guidance, the samples. If we click here, you'll see all kinds of samples in terms of how to open it, what kind of teaching style, all of that is outlined there. So it's a wonderful resource. And going on, you know, the bibliography, the tailored CV, the syllabi, reference letters, and some tips for that. You'll need three letters of reference, and all of this. So, and then you would just go ahead and click on the application there. Okay? So that is... that's what we have today, and now if we can get to some of your questions, because I know you probably have a lot of questions, and let's see, starting out, okay, all right. When requesting a letter of invitation, how much of a financial burden is shared with the host? Does this differ for core or chair? Well, this is a good question. It's an interesting question because it really brings up the commitment from a lot of the host countries that we have that have commissions. So it might be unknown to many of you that actually a lot of the commission countries and the binational Fulbright commissions do share the cost with us in the Fulbright program. And there are about 30 commissions that actually provide more funding from their side than the U.S. side. So there's definitely a lot of binational interest. But that's not something you really have to worry about in terms of your grant, because the benefits that are outlined in the stipend are what you'll be receiving, and the commission process is all of that. So you don't have to worry about if you're reaching out to a host and they're asking if they need to cover any costs for you, just let them know that you're applying with a Fulbright grant and that you'll be coming as a scholar and they don't need to provide anything financial for you. So that's one. Let's move on to the next one. Several of my university targets for obtaining a letter of invitation are not listed on past programs. How may I confirm that they qualify, that they'll qualify? Okay, that's a great question. The question is really boils down to will the hosts that I've identified qualify as host institutions for that award? And that really depends on the award. So for some countries, let's say for Germany, the affiliation must be with an accredited university or institution of higher education. Whereas the award to India, for example, you can affiliate with a think tank, a research center, an NGO, or a university. So taking a look at that and then cross-checking with the program staff who are listed on the award to see if that's fine. Because, for example, if we take the example of France, the host institution must be a French institution. So something that's global in nature or a bilateral kind of thing may not work. They really want a French institution. So that's one way to check for that particular wording in the award description. All right. So let's take a look at the next question. If I have a significant other who is not a spouse, would any of the travel stipend or other funds be available for me to be with my partner while abroad? That's a great question, and I believe that the qualification must be that they are a dependent. So if you would like to get further information, please email us. And for a dependent to be considered as a dependent, they must be with you on the grant for at least 80% of the time. So the dependent grant is not for non-accompanying dependents. So I hope I answered that question. For any more specifics on that, please email us and we can get that information to you. Okay, all right, let's take a look at the next one coming in. All right, a professor with a master's and over 25 years of entrepreneurial management and experience, also a doctoral student. I was looking for a teaching opportunity, but should I be looking at the student Fulbright? That's a good question, and I think the best way to approach this is to look for a professional, in other words, look for awards that are open to professionals that do not require a terminal degree. Because with 25 years of experience, you would be able to provide a lot of, contribute a lot to the program. If you are pursuing your PhD in a topic that is unrelated to your master's, it might be a little bit different. But I would say, why don't you email us and we can get that specific information to you. I'd like to see your CV as well, and we can kind of see exactly how far you are in the program. But I would say, if you're able to even take a grant during your PhD, that would be another question. The question I also have is what you're proposing to do related to your PhD? Because if it is, then you would need to go for the student program. If it's not, if you're just looking at providing experience and expertise based on your entrepreneurial management skills, then you would go for the scholar program. So you're in an interesting situation, so I'd have to know more about what your PhD project is all about. So please email us for more information on that. Okay, let's see. Okay, we have an economist interested in doing some interdisciplinary research using econometric techniques to analyze student outcomes in biology. Okay, so should I apply for an economics or an education discipline grant? So I would say if the project revolves around economics and your skills in using econometrics and all of that, I think it would still be safe to apply for an economics grant. You could also see if the particular award that you're interested in has any host institutions listed, and reach out to them and ask them, gauge their interest, if they would be interested in a project of that nature. And that's one way of really understanding if that award would be a good fit. Education, they're really going to be looking for your degree in education or an education-related field. So if your degree is in economics, the idea is that you would apply for an economics award or an all disciplines award. So, okay, moving on. Let's see. Okay, moving on. Okay, regarding the bibliography. Okay, so regarding the bibliography, should it be an annotated bibliography with something about the findings of the reference, or is it just an alphabetical list? So it need not be annotated. We really just want to see, again, it has a 3-page limit, so we really just want to see your awareness in, kind of the state of the art, the latest and most relevant publications. So you really just need to provide that in alphabetical order, so no annotations required. Okay, all right. We've got a few more coming in. Okay, we have someone who has been in discussion with a university in Milan regarding social entrepreneurship and corporate CSR relating to teaching and workshops. Should they reach out for a letter of invitation? So with the awards to Italy, I believe with the exception of a couple of them, most of them are partner awards. We do have the All Disciplines Award, so if you're interested in applying to the All Disciplines Award, that's great. The university there in Milan would probably be an appropriate institution. It seems to me that there's no problem with that. So absolutely, you can reach out for a letter of invitation, but again, please pay close attention to the specific wording on the award that you're interested in applying to, and reach out to us. If you have any particular questions, let us know what you're trying to do and the host institution that you identify. But I think that would be fine. It would also be a great way to gauge interest and see if what they would like you to do matches with the award. So absolutely. Okay, let's see. Okay. All right. I think we are all set with the questions. And I just want to thank all of you for attending the webinar. Oh, let's see. We just got one more coming in. Could you please tell us about the profile of reviewers of the application? Sure, absolutely. So we have kind of two committees, as I mentioned, the discipline peer reviewers and the peer regional reviewers. And so the discipline reviewers usually are, they're PhDs and experts in the field that we've identified. They come from a variety of institutions across the country, and it's a committee that looks at these for the academic merit, and then the regional peer committees are those from across disciplines that have been Fulbrighters, they're Fulbright grantees, alumni, and they know what it's like on the ground, and they've experienced being in that region, in that country, and can really attest to see if, you know, this would be a feasible project, as well as weighing in on the academic merit, the suitability, the feasibility, et cetera. And so there's a wide range of people who are looking at this, and then when it reaches the commission, then you have all of the staff at the commission or the embassy, depending on the country, taking a look at that and looking at the suitability and seeing if that's what they want to prioritize for that year. So there's several sets of eyes looking at this to ensure that they are the Fulbright standard, that the quality is high, and that it's suitable and feasible for the host and the institution. Okay. All right. Oh, we've got some more questions coming in. Okay, let's see. Let's see, going through. Okay, so we have someone who is a business executive and does not have a terminal degree, or let's say doesn't have a PhD, but has a master's. So if you have an MBA, in this case an MBA would be considered terminal for several of the awards, and this person has taught in a local university as an adjunct. So that's absolutely fine. So the Fulbright program welcomes scholars from all types of institutions and from all stages in their career. So that's not an issue. The main thing is to take a look specifically at the award description and reach out to the institute if the Fulbright Commission's address is also listed as the email address and you're unsure if they would be okay with that, you could reach out to them, you could reach out to us. Some countries are very particular. They want to have people affiliated with a home institution in the United States. Others are absolutely okay with having experts who are professionals that are not in academia. So since you kind of have a little bit of both experiences, I think you might be a great fit for some of the awards we have. So it really, again, you'll hear this a lot from us. It really depends on the award that you're interested in because each country and each award, and particularly if there's a host institution, has particular parameters and things that they're looking for. So if it's an all-disciplines award, you're probably safe to go with that, but if it's a very specific award, then definitely reach out to the program staff or any of the contacts listed in the award. Okay, let's see. Okay, so we have a question in terms of start date. So is June 2019 a desirable time to begin the grant, or is it recommended to begin in September? So that's a great question. Actually, the vast majority of awards do not allow you to start in the summer, with the exception of a very few, and that would be in July. And the reason is that we have our pre-departure orientations, and we're sending out a lot of the information and collecting information from you before you begin your grant. So the month of June is really important, and so that it wouldn't really be feasible for you to start a grant in June. Of course, if there's a teaching component to your project, to the award, they would ideally have you come in September or October, depending on when their semester starts. So the vast majority of awards, you'll see they have a preference for September start dates. But again, if it's flexible, it might say, you know, awards can begin anytime in September, from September 1st, and must, you know, initiate before March, for example. So you've got to start it at some point in the first or second semester so that you have enough time to have an impact, and especially with teaching, so that you can be there for the semester or whatever time that they have indicated in the award. So summer projects are usually not feasible. Okay, all right, let's see. Okay. Okay, so we have a question about the Distinguished Chair Awards. Does one need to already be in an equally senior position, so to speak, at the home institution? And the answer to that is actually yes. You would need to at least be at the associate or full professor rank. That's usually what's indicated in the Distinguished Chair Award description. However, there probably are a few exceptions to that, where I think I've seen a few of the Distinguished Chair Awards open to professionals outside of academia, in the case of the Business Awards, Business and Entrepreneurship. So do check that out. But in general, with the Fulbright program, Distinguished Chair usually indicates those that are, you know, the preferences for those at the associate or full professor rank. Okay, but in the case of business, there are a few exceptions. So that was a good question. All right, I think we've answered all of those that came in. Okay, well, I think we can wrap it up now, and I do want to thank you for attending this webinar. It will be archived within a few days, so be on the lookout for that if you'd like to go in and you know, listen again and click on the links that we've had for the awards. You can reach out also to any of the program staff, and I also want to highlight our discipline page here. You can see that we've got some highlights here. If you click on Business, Economics, and Entrepreneurship, and kind of get a sense of what scholars have done in the past by clicking on the story map, you can also see more of the feature awards here that I haven't actually had the chance to cover, so there's lots of different things, as well as more of the links here. So the Business, Economics, and Entrepreneurship page, again, is a great way to explore, and you can kind of have an interactive experience looking through it, what other scholars have done. So on that note, I want to thank you again for your time, and if there were some questions that I wasn't able to attend to, or if you had some questions come up after this webinar, please reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you and assist you with the application. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.